You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your own authority, financial planning, retirement accounts, really anything goes. If you've got a question, call me up. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We're going to get to those calls in just a couple minutes. You know, I've been talking most of the last half of this year about all the opportunities and all the positive signs I've been seeing as far as rates and volume. And I've said many times that there are great opportunities right now in the trucking industry. And I've also said that it looks like we should have pretty strong indicators and a pretty strong industry, you know, for the next, I've said 5 years. That's a long time to project out. So many things could change. One of the things that I'm watching right now, and, you know, I've said as long as nothing changes, we have some real opportunities, but we do have to be careful of something that could really turn the economy down. And one of the things I'm watching is right now, oil prices are dropping like crazy. And that's not necessarily a good thing for the economy. And here's the reason why. As the oil prices drop, gas prices will drop and other products as well. And that's good. That could stimulate the economy. But I think the reason we're seeing this drop is that OPEC is realizing the U.S. is producing a lot of oil. And what they're doing to regain market share, and OPEC has done this before, is they will just start a price war. They will just ramp up production, lower the price on the worldwide market. And if that price goes low enough, the U.S. can't afford to produce the oil they're producing. The Middle Eastern countries that OPEC represents, they just do standard drilling. The oil's just in the ground. They drill it, out it goes, nice and cheap. But the shale oil that we're getting, the fracking, the oil that we're producing in the U.S. right now is fairly expensive to produce. And if OPEC keeps the prices down long enough, then the U.S. will have to stop producing that oil. And that's where we're going to see a big, big change in the economy. That could really slow the economy down because so much of the U.S. economy right now is hot because of oil production, because of all the fracking, and because of the jobs that that's creating. So just something to keep an eye on. And there are a couple other indicators. This did happen one other time. If you remember, prior to the kind of economic meltdown of 2008, we saw oil prices drop dramatically. Now, there are a couple other indicators that if they happen, and it has to do with junk bonds, it could be a sign. So I'll keep an eye on that. You know, the thing is, even, I mean, I've looked at the numbers enough to know, even with a pretty serious economic downturn, if you're in the top half of the industry as far as owner-operators or small carriers, it's really not going to have a huge impact on you. But if you're in the bottom half, if you're, you know, not running a tight ship, it could have a huge impact on you. So one of the things that I've always tried to warn people about if you start a business in good economic times, or you make a major change, for example, we have a lot of owner-operators now who are getting their own authority, and I think it's a great idea. I really do. I think this is one of the best times I've seen for having your own authority. And you can survive right now with your own authority, even if you're doing a lot of things wrong. Rates are strong, there's plenty of freight, and you can make a lot of mistakes and still survive. That's good in a sense. But the one thing you've got to be aware of, if you start a business in good times, you better pay attention and get that business healthy quick. Because if the economy turns, I've seen a lot of businesses go out because of that. On the other hand, if you start a business in really bad times, for example, the current business we're running, our software, our website, the radio shows, we started that in 07, late 07, right into the downturn. And the first couple of years were really rough. But I'm confident now that as long as we maintain that type of fiscal management that we use to get us through those tough times, that we would be able to weather a downturn in the economy. You need to make sure that you're able to do that as well. So if you're getting your own authority, or you just became an owner operator and you've been doing it because the economy's good, that's okay. But just know, you get the business healthy. That way, if we do see a downturn, you'll be okay. Let's get started today in Georgia. Javin, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin? I'm a member of Profit Agents, and I was looking at my numbers. I'm doing my numbers, and they don't look too good as of now.
Yeah, you're right. Let's try to figure out why not. I see some problems. It might just be some data entry stuff. I'm not sure. Your revenue is only showing as $1.15 a mile. Is that possible?
Yes, because I used to deadhead about 2,500 to 3,000 miles a month. So I called you back in June, and I went out and got my own authority. You said I can do a lot better as leased on to that company. So I'm going to put in my numbers in September and October. I started my own authority in September.
Okay. That, you know, we really need to look at those. I mean, we can go through this. And one of the things I do want to talk about here, because I think it's got to be a mistake, is your fuel is showing up at $1.33 a mile. That's just impossible. So I think there's a data entry error there. What I'd like to do is get you with Brittany, so she can go through this and figure that out for you, because I'm sure that's a big mistake. The rest of the numbers, you know, because the revenue's kind of weird, this number's off, it's really hard to say. So what I think I'd like to have you do is I'd like to get you with Brittany, and let's fix this before you put in, and then maybe even have her help you put in the September numbers, and then we could go over it then. Because right now these numbers are so skewed, they're not going to do us much good. And you've changed operations. So let's take a look at that so we can compare the two.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to put you back on hold. I'll have Lisa pick up, and we will schedule a time to get Brittany with you and get you taken care of. Let's go to Texas. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I've got a question. I've heard you talk about when you download books on the Kindle with your Audible, you get them as a discount. Is that all books? I downloaded the Fair Tax Now books, and I wanted, you know, to get them on Audible, but I'm not sure how you get that discount price.
You know, I got to go back and figure that out, because what was happening was sometimes when I was buying the book, right then it would pop up and say, you know, would you like to add? And I think it's always happened when I bought the Kindle version first. I don't know that it's ever happened.
That's what I did.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever happened if I bought the Audible version first. I can't remember. But sometimes I'll be buying a Kindle book, and I'll get a pop-up, and it'll say, you know, you could add the audio version of this book for $3 more, whatever it is. But I don't see it all the time. And I'm not sure if I don't see it, how to find it. So maybe it's only on certain books, and if it is on that book, it pops up. I don't know. I'm going to have to do some research on that.
Okay. I got another quick question, if I could.
Sure.
I was at the CMC, I think, a couple of years ago. It's when you had that that extra thing, you know, for the group. What was it, like three nights?
Yeah. Okay. 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. What I was wondering is if you ever thought about having, I'd like to go again, but I'd like to leave room, you know, for the people that haven't been to it. You know, and if you'd have something kind of the same venue there, but kind of separate, that some of your team could teach things, you know, kind of a more advanced thing or something like that.
Hold that thought. I'm going to come back and talk about that. That's a good question. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Before the break, I was talking with Mike in Texas. Mike, you still with me?
Yes.
Okay. So what we're working on this year, and it's similar to what you're talking about, because we have so many people who do come back to the event year after year after year, that we've decided now to try to make it a little more flexible in what you can attend. For example, Mike Beckett's material almost never changes. You know, there aren't that many changes happening in wheels and alignment. He does the same thing every year, and it's great material, but if you've seen it two or three times, you probably would rather see something else, and we realize that. So this year, we're trying to work out breakout sessions where not everybody who is attending is seeing the same thing. So we have talked to a lot of other people about presenting different material, new material. We'll be doing a lot more this year about getting your own authority and operating as a carrier. You know, we've talked about doing more on financial planning and more on budgeting and spreadsheets. And we have all these topics we want to cover. The tough part is the logistics of it all, figuring out the scheduling and the rooms and the space we have available at the hotel. So this year we're going to make our first attempt at that, and we're probably, the other thing that would allow us to do is get more people in, because right now, you know, 225 people is the most we can get into the main room at one time. But if we're doing smaller groups, then maybe we'd be able to have 300 people total attend, because you'll be moving around in, you know, different sessions. So we are looking at that, and we're going to attempt it this year. We're just not sure how big we'll make it. I don't want to try something so drastic that we screw the whole thing up.
So possibly next year you might have like an a la carte thing then, and then...
Yeah, this year we're going to kind of schedule it and see how it works, but we're not going to hold anybody to that, you know, you have to be here and here. So we'll kind of give it a shot this year and then see how it goes, and, you know, see how the scheduling works with all the different rooms. It's just it's a lot of logistics, and We're in the middle of working on those logistics now, but that is the direction that we're going to move the CMC, is that it will be a week-long event, but you'll be able to kind of pick and choose. We've talked about three different lanes, And that's the ultimate goal. I'm just not sure we can make that work yet. But the three different lanes, for example, there would be a schedule for the week for people who aren't owner-operators yet but want to become owner-operators. So they would have a certain schedule of sessions they would go through. Then the second lane might be people who are owner-operators and they are leased to a carrier. So they would have a schedule of things and sessions they would go through for the week. And then the third lane would be owner-operators with authority and carriers, and they would have a schedule. Now, you know, about 70% of the material is the same for everybody when it comes to things like maintenance and fuel mileage and bookkeeping, and many of those things are the same. But then the other 30% would depend on which lane you are in. That's the direction we're taking the event, and we just have to work out all the details. Let's go to Ohio. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. My question is about auto shift transmissions. I'm looking at buying an 05 International with a Cummins that has an auto shift in it, 851,000 miles on the current setup. What things should I be looking for when it comes to this transmission, and what is the life expectancy of one of these transmissions, if you know that?
Yeah, I do. The life expectancy of the mechanical part of the transmission, the gears and that, very similar to a standard, a manual transmission, because the transmission is manual. That's why we call them auto shift, not automatic. So it is a manual transmission, the same transmission we've had for decades. We just have a computer and actuators shift the transmission for you. So the life expectancy is at least as long as it's always been, and actually a little longer, because the computer, unless something malfunctions, really never misses a shift, doesn't grind gears. So it's actually easy on the transmission, the mechanical part of it. The downside to these transmissions is they are prone to electrical problems that can be very hard to diagnose. And if you get stuck with one like that, it's very frustrating. The Meritors are worse because nobody's really servicing that transmission anymore. The Eaton, the chances of having those kind of problems aren't quite as bad, but I had an issue with an auto shift that was very frustrating. And occasionally I get calls and it's the same thing, as, you know, they just start throwing parts at it and they can't figure it out. And the transmission can be very frustrating because they tend to lock in gear. And it's not one of those things you can fix on the side of the road, so you're usually looking at a tow bill. So I do like the auto shift in some ways. I've had several of them, but that electrical issue kind of turned me off from them a little bit. I've got another question for you, though. Why are you buying an 05?
Well, I have the option between an 05 and a 13 International. And
why?
Whole DPF.
Hold on. Why do you only have the choice of those two trucks?
For the carrier that I'm on with and everything, with the particular job that we're doing, it's what I have available to me.
Is it because it's a lease? You're buying the truck through the carrier?
No, I'm actually not buying it through the carrier.
Then I'm confused. Why just these two specific trucks? I don't understand that.
That's what I have available to me. The truck that I had went out on me.
Hold on. Explain.
And I've got X amount of days.
Well, yeah, but see, that's a lousy reason to buy the wrong truck, because then you're stuck with it forever. I mean, if you have X amount of days, you know, I'd rent a truck. You're saying that this is all that's available to you, but I'm not understanding that, because there's 100,000 trucks available right now. Why just these two? It's not making any sense. And the reason I'm asking is because I might be able to give you better advice if I can understand what's going on.
They've been converted. instead of a they're single axles because we're running a dedicated UPS freight. Location A to location B, loaded up, empty, coming back, and that kind of thing. I only have X amount of days to get back into the contract, but I have to maintain a certain weight and be under a certain weight with the tractor. That's why I'm having issues at looking at renting stuff, because I don't have that ability to just go out and, okay, give me a standard truck. What the leasing agent that we deal with, what they have is they've got a handful of 13s, and they've got two or three 05s.
Yeah, see, whatever the criteria is for that truck, single axle, certain weight, I guarantee you I could find a truck in 2 days that would meet that criteria.
Okay, and where can I find that information?
Well, okay.
I've looked through truck paper.
Okay, it needs to be a single axle. Here's the other thing. I can convert a tandem to a single in a day. I mean, that's not a big job.
Okay.
So now it opens up all the possibilities of all the tandem axle tractors that are available, which, again, we're talking tens of thousands. I mean, and it needs to be a certain weight. Well, if they've got trucks available that meet that weight, that can't be that hard to do. So single axle and a certain weight. I'm just not seeing where the criteria is that big of a deal.
Okay.
Now for me, and the reason I'm making...
Maybe I've overcomplicated it.
I think so. And the reason I'm making, you know, I want you to think hard about this, is the 2 years of trucks right now that, 2 or 3 years, the worst I think I just wouldn't buy would be 04, 5, and 6. The earliest of the emission engines, we had tons of problems with them, and you're buying a truck, it's 05, it's already 10 years old, basically. Why not go a year or two older? We can find the same miles and get away from emissions completely.
Okay.
So
I would
rethink this. In fact, I can promise you there is no way I would buy that 05 you just described to me. Wouldn't happen. And I certainly don't want a 13. They don't have an age requirement, so go look for a good 03. Whatever the requirements are, I guarantee I could find that truck in less than a week, or I could build it from a tandem, convert it to a single. Lots of options here. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help, we have a team here, the Let's Truck team. We can help you out with all kinds of things. If you've got questions, if you need any help with your accounting, if you need a scan gauge, you want to order anything from our store, whatever it might be, just give us a call. 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-FUEL. 3835. Let's go back to the phones. We're off to Wisconsin this time. Randy, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind?
I've been driving a 2009 Cascadia 10 speed. So I'm in a lease program and a truck opened up. I know you like the older trucks. It's a 99 Century with an N14. 10-speed. I mean, it's cheaper, of course. It has 300,000 miles on the rebuild. I mean, would you stick with the 09? I had no problems with the 09, but I know the older trucks, they don't have all that electrical stuff. What do you think?
Well, I would make this decision by the numbers. So right now on your current 09, what is your cost per mile for fuel?
See, I haven't figured that out. So I get my average round trip, and I only with the Cascade, I only get 6.4 miles a gallon. So,
if you don't know your fuel cost per mile, my guess is you don't know the maintenance cost per mile either, right?
Right, pretty much.
See,
yeah.
That's the problem. It's really tough to make decisions without the numbers, because that's the whole thing here. If this 09 is doing okay, but I don't know that till I can hear the numbers. The 6.4 miles to the gallon certainly doesn't excite me. I mean, that's nothing to get excited about. But I can't see the maintenance cost. My gut feeling is it's hard to go wrong with the older trucks. There just aren't that many things that could really hurt us with an older truck. The newer trucks, that's not the case. I've seen newer trucks just put people out of business, either with the cost of the maintenance or all the downtime. So to answer your question on the surface, I would say you're probably better off getting out of the 09 and looking at this other deal. I don't have any of the numbers on it. But more importantly, you've got to get your accounting done. That is the real answer here, because we don't know the right answer to this question without the numbers, and you shouldn't be running a business without the numbers. So get your accounting caught up, call me back, and then we can go through it. And that's the most important thing right now. Not which truck you have, it's how you're not running this like a business and you need to start. Let's go to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I have a comment about one of your shows you like to talk about, the Prophet.
Yeah.
I think I've watched 20 episodes over the weekend.
Isn't that I love that show. That guy is so amazing. When he walks into a business, looks around and said, okay, we're going to do this, 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 and this. And it's just amazing to watch him transform the business.
I have my 8-year-old daughter. She's already hooked on the show. She likes watching that. Anything business. I mean, she's a mini me. So it's a great show. I haven't started Shark Tank. I'm going to wait till the holidays to start that, open that can of worms.
Oh, yeah. Those two shows, just absolutely love them.
Oh, yeah. I highly recommend it. Just watching the show will make you be a better business owner, because you'll pick up a few cues.
Yeah.
I asked Lisa to pull up my fuel gauges.
I've got it here in front of me.
And I'm sure you might like my handle, but
yeah.
I that space I'm pulling, I run Central Texas. I average about 2,000 miles a week. I haul pipe, PVC pipe, so I'm tall, about 8 feet tall, and I have typically about an 8-foot gap. So aerodynamics is not very very good. But I run about 53 miles an hour, loaded or empty. Sometimes I have to run 70 if I have to get 2 trips in a day. But my average length of haul is only about 240 miles.
Okay.
So I usually don't have to speed. But my truck is 2010 Cascadia, 336 rear 10 speed. And I am starting to run more city. Like, I run Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas. And I do a lot of city driving, and I'm actually getting a lot more runs that are multi-stop, which pay a lot more. I mean, the average multi-stop that I can do pays on average $4 a mile. And I really want an auto shift. I'm done shifting gears. And I like the gearing of a Volvo. I like to run an 11th direct on the XB13, and I like the 12th if I need it, with a 264. Increase, obviously, emission side. What increase do you think I could see having a more aerodynamic truck? Because my truck has no fairings. What would you say? Would it be almost a mile per gallon gain, or is too tough to sell?
Well, I just want to be clear. You're actually thinking about getting a different truck, right?
Yes. I have to either I'm going to put somebody in this truck, and I have three other trucks. They're all trucks that I bought through my company or through the company I'm leased to, and I'm looking to buy one for myself.
Okay,
I'm just trying to get an idea.
Yeah, one of the reasons it's hard to answer a question like that, as you said, you know, what would happen if I replaced this truck with one that's more aerodynamic? Well, the aerodynamics we could figure out, but the problem is when you replace this truck with any other truck, not only the aerodynamics change, everything changes.
Yeah.
So we can't really make a comparison. We could say if you took this truck and you put a full aerodynamic package on it, but this is already a Cascadia. I mean, it's already aerodynamic. It's just not, you don't have some fairings or some skirts or things like that. So, you know,
the gearing is my biggest concern. I mean, they spec these trucks to go 65 and I run 53. So
yeah, the gearing is...
I'm running 53 at 1150 RPM, which will do.
Right.
You know, but going up hills, no problem. And then ninth is two, I wish I had another gear.
Well, and first of all, right now, you know, your mileage is good. It's not, you know, the numbers we get really crazy exciting about. But if you look at not just your fuel mileage, but if you look at your fuel cost, you're only
I pay
39 cents a mile. I mean, that's insane. That's one of the lowest cost of fuel I've seen in a long time.
Our carrier, which is based in Springfield, Missouri, we get the Texas fuel because I only fill up in Texas. I filled up on Sunday. If you look at that ticket on the 30th, we got it at a Pilot in New Brunswick, Texas for $2.59 a gallon that day, just for one day.
Wow.
And I filled up last night for $2.78. Now, that's taking the that's before the state tax.
Right, right. Now, those are, you know, so the cost is good. The gearing, yeah, we could make some improvements there. There's no question, but... To try to predict, you know, a more aerodynamic truck, we have to look at all the other factors too. So
exactly, and I understand. I mean, our Cascadia Evolutions that we have now are 2014. I'm friends with the person who specced all the trucks. I wish I was friends with them. I would change my mind on a few things when they got to 2010s. Then they have seen just between my truck and the Evolutions a 1.15 mile per gallon increase because they did change the gearing a little bit, and they obviously the whole truck is completely different setup.
Right, right.
But I can't compare a Freightliner to a Volvo because that's what I'm looking at. I really don't want to buy anything new. Unfortunately, I have a lot of age restrictions, but I'm going to have knee surgery done in spring, and I do not want to be used in much metal anymore. So I do with as much city driving. I you know, those numbers that you see, they're all back roads and they're all city driving. I rarely hit the interstate.
Yeah, those are good fuel numbers then. And I agree. I mean, I've done a lot of city work in my time, and I'd love an auto shift in doing a lot of city work. And like I say, I've got mixed emotions about them. I like them. I like the flexibility of an auto shift where I can let the computer shift it if I'm feeling lazy, or I can put it in manual and shift myself to get better fuel economy. I like that. I like that flexibility, and it really still is a manual transmission. The downside is if you get one that has the electrical problems, you can spend a lot of money trying to troubleshoot them. So I'm a little hesitant. I used to recommend them a lot. I'm a little hesitant to recommend them now. I'd let people know that is an issue you could run into. They can be expensive to troubleshoot if you start to see some electrical problems. I'm looking at the clock and the music's playing. That means I'm going to have to get to a break, but we've got more stuff right around the corner. Don't go away. The number to call us if you need some help, 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Las Cruces. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Kevin.
What can I help you with today?
Can you hear me? Yeah, I am. I've not been good with oil samples at all, and I finally took, I've been using the bypass filters and everything, and just not good with oil samples at all. So I finally took samples, and I'm a little worried about truck 510.
Okay.
Fuel dilution and iron.
Yeah, so truck 511, let's just get that one out of the way first, because that is super clean. I mean, that oil looks like you just poured it out of the jug. It's so clean. That's an ISX. What year is it?
That's a 2006 ISX.
Wow, you've got a good one. We hardly ever see an ISX with an oil sample that clean. So on that truck, just keep doing what you're doing. On the truck number 510, C12 Cat, does this truck idle a lot?
I got two drivers in it, and we do crude oil with it. So we do a lot of PTO work with it.
Okay. And when you run the PTO, are you getting the engine up to operating temperature?
Yeah, it's 1400 RPM.
It is 1400. So that shouldn't do it. So let's set aside the PTO work for a second. Other than the PTO, is there just plain idling going on?
No.
Okay.
Because he actually, that driver lives in a camper, and that thing is shut down every night. The Volvo, the 511 actually idles a lot, the one with the clean oil sample. So
yeah, well,
that doesn't make any sense.
Well, some engines can idle for days and not really produce any fuel dilution. Others, they will if you let them idle too much. Here's the thing with the Cat right now. I'm going to say just keep an eye on this. And the reason why is because this fuel dilution is not that bad, and I'm not seeing any other problems yet. It's not really causing any wear metals. It hasn't, it's not a big problem with the viscosity or the base. And too many times we go in and start messing with an injector or injectors and things get worse. So I would say if this stays under 5, let's keep an eye on it. If the next sample or any sample comes in over 5, then you're going to have to go in and do the injectors.
Yeah. Well, they're not that old. I mean, the truck has been rebuilt before, so the engine.
And, why I'm hesitant to go in right now. This isn't bad, and it's not causing any problems, so let's just wait and see on this one. Let's go to Nebraska. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Well, Kevin, I got a couple questions about tires, and I've got a T660 with a Cummins, 13-speed, 533 rear ends. At any rate, 355, a little bit different. And I've got 24.5s on here. I'm getting about, average lifetime, about 7.2, okay? We've got a few things to this and that. And my son has got 22.5s, a truck exactly like mine, only he's got 22.5s on it. And he's also got a ultra shift, I guess you call it, a 10-speed ultra shift with the clutch pedal.
Okay.
My question to you is, would we gain anything? Am I thinking wrong by, he's got 22.5 low pros, if we would put 24.5 talls on his and slow the RPM down, probably 300 to 400 RPM compared to, and get it more like mine, if that's possible, would that save any fuel for us?
No. This isn't and I understand the logic behind this. The problem is the lower RPMs might improve fuel economy. There's a good chance it will, but that's not always a guarantee. But the other problem is the bigger tire will hurt fuel economy. The bigger tire has...
Right.
Yeah, so most of the time, at best, it's a wash. And it's just not worth screwing around with. I would keep the Low Pro 22.5s. That's the tire we want. If you need to make a change, in this case, I would make a change in the gearing.
Okay, okay. And that brings me back to the point of the transmission. It's got a 10-speed in it, automatic. And I there's a myth out there that this can be changed into a 13-speed manual. Is there any truth to that?
Well, it's possible. And without knowing the model number, I don't know for sure. Well, wait a minute. I don't think any of the 10 speeds could ever be converted to 13. They were 9 speeds that could be converted.
That's what I was wondering.
I don't remember any 10 speeds. Now, I could be wrong. There might be one. I'm just not aware of it. But I don't remember any 10 speeds that can be converted.
Right.
The converting an auto shift to a manual can be done. I have a couple companies that have done a lot of those. But I don't think you can make this one a 13-speed. So, and even in some of the convertibles, when you convert it from a 9 to a 13, you don't change the top gear. The top gear ratio is exactly the same, so you don't end up changing the RPMs at all.
Okay. So that'd be a kind of a wash issue, really, too. It's a little bit of a dog between 9th and 10th. He's got quite a few little bit of horsepower, but it's still, I mean, I just eat that truck up going up hills. We haul in the Midwest, and I'm lagging way back behind him just for giggles or whatever. And then when we get in the hills, we're going the same speed, and I catch him in a quarter of a mile.
And so what gears are yours?
355s, and his are 355s.
Oh. Why do we think there's a gearing problem?
Well, between 9th and 10th gear and his and the automatic, it really dogs it down. It's almost like a regular 10-speed. You know, compared to my 13-speed, it's just a night and day difference. At least that's my opinion. Maybe you can set me straight. But
I'd like
to go with the 13-speed in that truck is what I would really like to do.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think the pulling problem is the transmission. When we can split a gear, it helps a little bit, but I'm really not going to get up the hill that much faster with the 13 speed over a 10. I think this is a performance issue. I think if you were to put both these trucks on the dyno, you would find a big difference between horsepower and torque.
That's probably that could very well be, Kevin. Yes. That's what it acts like to me. I mean, it's like I'm passing him in a car compared to his.
I would be looking at performance issues because the drivetrain is so close on these two trucks that you shouldn't see any significant performance difference. A little bit, like I said, if we were drag racing up the hill, you'd have that advantage of being able to split a gear and you'd be able to shift a little sooner than I could and you would pull away a little bit. But if these two trucks were putting out the same horsepower and torque, the driveline differences are so minor that it just wouldn't make much of a difference going up a hill.
I agree with you because I just leave mine on cruise and I can just, go around. I got to take it off cruise. I'll run in the back and then or go around him. That's how. So
yeah.
I'd say you're probably right on performance.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry.
Like an air filter. That's okay. Air filter problem. It mainly be who knows what it could be. It could be performance wise. But that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the first steps we could do when I'm trying to troubleshoot a truck for performance, the first thing we do is an oil sample. If we see high soot, then we know we're not getting complete combustion, and that's certainly a performance issue. We might see fuel dilution. We might see fuel dilution and high soot. We might see a lot of blow-by. All of those things could affect performance. That would help us, and then ultimately, we could put both of these trucks on a dyno, and we could see what the horsepower and torque output of each truck was. And my guess is you're going to see a pretty significant difference. The truck that is really pulling better, it's an engine issue. It's not a driveline issue. These two drivelines are too close to be very different. I am looking at the clock, and it looks like I'm going to have to get out of here. Jonesy's up next with the all-night truck stop. Stick around for that. If you need any help, we have lots of resources available. You can check out the website. It's letstruck.com. You can also call us. We're always here to help. That number is 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. We'll see you back here next time. Thanks for choosing to spend an hour of your time with me tonight. I really do appreciate it. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.